On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, our division previews begin. We are talking about the National League East, the Marlins, the Nationals, the Mets, Phillies, and Braves. How are we feeling about these teams? Who plays for these teams? What did they do over the winter? And what are the biggest questions we have about them? This is the NL East preview. This is Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with East Coast bias. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And guess what? I care more about where I live.
Yeah, I think that's extremely valid. As we begin our journey through our division previews on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will be starting with the National League East over the next 2 weeks. Now that we are back to three times a week, we will be previewing all six Major League Baseball divisions. And I don't know how we decided to start with the NL East, but we did. And so you're stuck with our first season preview discussion will be about the Marlins of Miami. And I'm so excited to do it. The way we do these season previews is very simple. We tell you what happened to them last year. How did their season finish? We tell you what they did over the winter. We tell you who's on the team, which is, I think, an important part of previewing any season. Who's on the baseball team? Give you one big question, our key players, and then we will deliver our official predictions for the over-under, which we have gathered from various internet sources. But Jake, anything else we need to say before we dive into the National League East?
Yeah, we know that there are injuries afoot in the world of Major League Baseball, most notably to one Mr. Gerrit Cole. It is Monday morning, 9:12 a.m. As it currently stands, we do not know what the dealio is with his elbow ligament. It certainly does not look promising or sound promising from Yankees camp. I was there this morning. I did not see Gerrit Cole. His name was not on the schedule for anything. Like, it was not like recovery group two or bullpen five or whatever the hell. So we're in a holding pattern. By the time you're listening to this, maybe you have more information. It is not a good thing for the Yankees. No freaking duh. We will touch on it once we have more news.
Yeah, we have more. Again, other news injuries are going to come up as we lead up to opening day. But for now, we will cover that when we do the American League East, I guess a week from today. But right now, we will stay focused on those Eastern teams in the National League. And Jake, we will work worst to first, at least projected worst to first, as we will be going generally off of the Fangraphs projections that are kind of laying out the order for us. And we are going to work from the bottom of these divisions to the top. Now, there's no question about where to start in this division. Where we might finish is maybe worth debating, but I think it is a fair bet that at the end of this season, the Marlins of Miami will be at the bottom, and that is where we will begin.
Started from the bottom, now we're here, still at the bottom. Their projected record on Fangraphs is 71-91, which it just does not compute in my brain. Last year, the over-under was 78.5. Remember, they made the playoffs in 2023. How many games did they win? 62. That is 16.5 games below their over-under. Jake and Jordan last year both took the under. Clap it up. Big win.
Yeah,
for the program.
I think we knew that this probably isn't going to go quite as well as it did the year before, as much as we like rooting for the fighting fish. That 2023 team now feels like a whole lot more than 2 years ago for a lot of reasons.
Correct. And that's because this is a whole new regime. Kim Ng, who was the architect of that postseason team, was fired and replaced with Peter Bendix as the president of baseball operations. Peter Bendix, when it became clear at the beginning of spring, really, that the 2024 Marlins were going to be big butt, he pulled out the floorboards and the copper wiring in the wall and put it all on the curb and went on Craigslist and said, take whatever you want, please return prospects. And that is part of why that team was so bad last year, is they just traded away a lot of talent at the deadline to restock the farm system. And they are in a full rebuild. I would argue they are still in the teardown phase of it. And for that reason, their offseason was nothing. They traded away Jake Berger to the Rangers for some prospects. And they signed Cal Quantrill, former Guardians and Rockies starter. That was their only major league signing. This is a baseball team that is not trying to win baseball games. The players are. Players are doing their best. But the front office right now is focused on 2029.
Yeah. How far in the future is maybe up for debate. I had this this stat in when we did the 26 and under rankings. Since the start of the 2024 season, they've traded 14 players from their 40-man, which is an amazing thing in exchange for, I think, 23 prospects, right? So they've done a lot of acquisitions in bulk, and now it is about the young guys. It is about the young guys and one notable, not as young guy who's very important for their upcoming season. And another important name that I don't think we've mentioned yet is Clayton McCullough. They've hired a new manager from the World Series champion Dodgers. He has been their first base coach, one of their main bench lieutenants for the last few years. He seems to be the right kind of guy to bring in for this kind of team. But obviously, we are not expecting Clayton McCullough to drive this team to winning. He's trying to get these players to improve across the board so that they can feel like they can compete at some point in the not so incredibly distant future.
His job is to help develop and make sure that no one punches anyone else in the face after a 13-game losing streak. Who is on this baseball team? You have heard of very few of these people. Behind the dish, it is a Nick Fortes, Liam Hicks tandem, which, whew, first base, member of the Jewish community, member of the DC Jewish community, shouts True. Out Matt Mervis, former Cub acquired over the winter. Second base, Otto Lopez. Third base, Connor Norby, who was in the trade from Baltimore for Trevor Rogers at the deadline. Shortstop, Xavier Edwards, one of their players where we're like, yeah, he's good. Like, he's a good player. Kyle Stowers, left field, also in that trade. Dane Myers in center. Jesus Sanchez in right. He is really the lone holdover at this point from the 2023 team in the everyday lineup on the offensive side. And then their DH is Jonah Bride, who you probably haven't heard of, but is basically Jake Berger.
Well, he doesn't have that. He doesn't have that kind of pop, but he's had a pretty solid minor league career and was a well above average hitter. Not well. Yeah, whatever. 121 OPS plus on the Marlins is very impressive. Like, he's a solid bat.
That group has a chance to be historically awful. Now, part of the reason the Marlins' floor isn't that low is because the following pitchers are pretty good. Sandy Alcantara coming back from Thomas Johnson surgery will be the one. He'll start on opening day. And backed up by Ryan Weathers, who looks sensational in camp, Edward Cabrera, Max Meyer, the aforementioned Cal Quantrill, and Yuri Perez, who will be injured to start the season, but that will be later on during the year, and it's definitely something to keep an eye on. In the bullpen, it is Calvin Fauché, Jesus Tinoco, and Anthony Bender. The point of this bullpen is to hope that some of these guys have breakout seasons and they can trade them at the deadline. Those are the Miami Marlins. Jordan, what is one big question about this team?
Unfortunately, it's pretty simple. Will this be the worst team in baseball? When you trade away as many major leaguers as you have over a short period of time, this is the point. Peter Bendix is trying to make this roster make it look like something that he wanted, and he has gone to extreme lengths to do that. A lot of the players that are most important in that equation and all those moves are not necessarily in the major leagues yet. However, some of them are, and as we get to the key players, I think, you know, Norby's certainly one of them we can talk about more. But the thing is with this Marlins team, we know they're going to be really bad this year. Maybe they're the worst team. You want to avoid a situation with the White Sox. We're going into the White Sox season a year ago. We were like, wow, they're going to be really bad. But none of us said they're going to be one of the worst teams of all time. And they ended up being an embarrassment. Are the Marlins going to be an embarrassment this year? And that will have a lot to do with Clayton McCullough. That will have a lot to do with Peter Bendix. That will have a lot to do with, honestly, the ownership and how they go about treating this team and how they prepare them to not necessarily lose, hopefully, 120 games. Because we know they're going to be bad. They're undermanned. They're inexperienced. But there's a version of a rebuilding team where people are not miserable the way that they were with the White Sox. And that is going to be their goal in a lot of senses.
What does success look like for this team Now, there's what does success look like for this organization, and that's minor league development, particularly on the hitting side. You start to see some breakouts maybe in the minor leagues, and you could project some of those pieces being important in the future. At the major league level, it's trying to identify which of these players will be on the next good Marlins team. Now, I don't know if we're even at that stage yet with them.
Right.
I think Xavier Edwards is really, and Norby are the two where it's like you could look at that. And let's transition now to who we think the key players are going to be. You're most interested in Norby and Edwards.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Edwards, what he really showed last year, which is, again, like this is most importantly a shortstop. I know his defensive reputation is not necessarily as amazing as you would maybe want for your, you know, your everyday shortstop. But this guy hit .328 last year. And this is one of those things where it's like, okay, how much do we care about batting average? But his OBP was also close to .400. He doesn't have a lot of power, but he doesn't strike out. He stole 31 bases, only caught four times. This is a fun player to kind of have at the top of your lineup, and a productive one, right? A switch hitter with plus-plus speed who can put the ball in play and can play shortstop. Like he checks a lot of boxes of a player you want to have. Now, generally on a championship team, you might want him, that guy actually batting eighth or ninth and batting first. But for this team, he will be a fun guy to get a lot of plate appearances and maybe steal 40, 50 bases. But Norby... Edwards, I feel like I know what I have. Norby, I feel like, is more of a key because when he's someone... Now, I know they acquired Edwards in a trade, too. But when you acquire Norby, not that they clearly are missing Trevor Rogers very much. At the same time, Norby's someone who was kind of divisive as a prospect. Like, by the time he was up in the upper minors and hitting, it was like, all right, is this going to work? Is this guy going to be a 20-plus homer guy that you can play at third base every day or maybe play at second base every day? The strikeouts have been elevated at times, but... He seems like someone that they're really trusting can be a cornerstone offensive player that you feel like can kind of drive your offense. And I'm fairly optimistic, but I think we will learn a lot as he faces major league pitching for a full season this year.
My key player is Sandy Alcantara, who won the Cy Young in 2022 with an 8-WAR pitching season, which is remarkable. He threw 228 innings in 2022. 2023, he was a reduced version of himself. 2024, missed the whole year with Tommy John. And like, he's a huge X factor, not just for the Marlins, but for the trade deadline. Like, there is a scenario where Alcantara looks awesome early and the Marlins pull the plug and they flip him at the deadline. He has a couple more years of control at a really low salary. And he could be the best player. Like, he could be the best player moved. Right now, obviously, the Marlins are rooting for that because they're trying to get some value back. Is he on the next good Marlins team? Seems impossible. I'm just excited to have him back. He is the most relevant player on the club.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll see if he even gets all the way to July. He's already looked fantastic in spring. He's owed about $35 million over the next couple of years with a club option for $21 million in 2027. That it just makes him such a valuable trade chip. And that's the other big picture thing with the Marlins is you could say, oh, how could you trade Sandy? And yes, obviously, if you're a Marlins fan, it's going to hurt to trade Sandy. But developing pitchers has not been the issue for Miami. And so they have to feel confident. This is why I mentioned Norby as the X factor, because they're going to trade Sandy, and we feel good about Weathers and Max Meyer and Thomas White and Noble Meyer and so many of these other guys that they have coming because they've proven they can backfill those. The bats have just not been there. That's why it's just been a bad, even when they were in the postseason, it was a terrible offense. So that's what we need to see, a huge steps forward across the board. But I agree that Sandy is almost certainly gone on another team by July, and that is going to be a big deal.
Over under 62.5 wins.
That is still quite low, but I'm gonna go under. I mean, again, they won 62 last year. Why are they gonna win more? So I'm going under here, especially in the division. They're gonna lose a lot of games.
I unfortunately agree with you. Our next team to preview, the Washington Nationals. No team has lost more baseball games since the start of the 2020 season than these Washington Nationals, who last year won 71 games. Their over under was 66.5. Jake and Jordan both took the over. We believed that the 2024 Nats would be mediocre, and boy, they were. Clap it up for Jake and Jordan. 2-0.
Is 71 mediocre? I mean, I feel like they felt mediocre when I watched them. But I mean, it was still a bottom, you know, five record. I mean, it was still a bad team. I mean, let's not give us too much credit just for going over on 66.5. But anyway, so they, but still, they have a lot of young players come up, and they have some of the pitching seem to make some progress. And so in the offseason, we're like, all right, Nats, we don't think you're necessarily ready to really go for it, but let's see you make some moves. They trade for Nathaniel Lowe. They bring back Josh Bell. They bring back Trevor Williams. They sign Mike Soroka. Ooh, that's looking kind of spicy. He's looking interesting in spring training. We were all laughing at them for having him be a starter after his success in the bullpen with the White Sox last year. They bring in veteran infielders Paul DeJong and Amed Rosario. So not exactly a free spending. All right, here, time to go for it. But they were pretty busy.
I think this was a fascinating offseason. And it's a little bit of story time here. The first time the Nats got good, this ownership group invested heavily in the roster before they got good. They signed Jason Wirth before the record started turning around. This time, it does not seem like ownership is willing to do that. They want the young core to prove itself first before they add financially to the team. And I think a lot of that has to do with the 2019 and 2020 seasons. The Nats win the World Series in 2019, and they don't get to capitalize and profit from that in the same way that every other team in baseball history has, because the revenue that comes with winning a World Series tends to come in the following season, whether that's ad dollars or ticket sales or concessions or merchandise. It all works on a one-year tape delay, and because of the pandemic, the Nats never really got that. Now, that's not to say that the ownership group is, you know, cutting out coupons at Safeway, but there's less disposable, not even less disposable income. There's less of an appetite to spend. And you can understand how it gets to that point. And so what I think is super important about the season for the Nats, and we'll get to who's on the team, does this team convince the ownership group that the 2026 Nats are worth investing money in next winter?
Yeah. And just to before you kind of run through the lineup, just to kind of give you that, go back to that history lesson, right, is the Nats signed Jason Wirth coming off a 93 loss season. And the next year, they won 80 games in 2011 with Jason Wirth. And then the year after that, they won 98, right? And then now they kind of entered that era of being super duper competitive for a lot of reasons beyond Jason Wirth, but Jason Wirth ended up being a big part of that. So I guess now the question is this year is how, to your point, right? Can they take that step forward? So does this team this year, you know, they don't have a Jason Wirth in that sense. So they didn't spend on a Jason Wirth, but they do have some very exciting pieces. Who is on this baseball team, and can they take a step, another step towards 500?
Behind the dish, it is K-Bear Ruiz and Riley Adams. Ruiz is really a fascinating and unfortunate character. The Nats extended him to a big, relatively big contract for a catcher his age, and he has been horrendous, downright horrible. He does not hit the baseball hard. He swings way too often, and he is bad behind the plate. I have given up on him as a player and am willing to be proven wrong.
Continue. I have a few Ruiz thoughts, but go through the rest of the lineup.
Nathaniel Lowe, who they acquired from the Rangers, is at first base. Luis Garcia Jr., who was sneaky awesome last year, is at second.
He's fun. Good player.
Shortstop CJ Abrams, great in the first half, made the All-Star team, bad in the second half, made the casino. Third base is Paul DeJong, who they signed over the winter, and we have gotten emails about. The outfield is exhilarating. In the corners, it is James Wood and Dylan Cruz, two of the top prospects in all of baseball. Last year, I guess Cruz is still eligible. Wood is not. And in center, Jacob Young, who is so fast and so stacked and can't really hit, but boy, he can go get it. Josh Bell is the DH. Now, the rotation is really interesting. Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, Trevor Williams, Mitchell Parker, Michael Soroka, who I am very high on. In the bullpen is Kyle Finnegan, Jorge Lopez, who, remember, threw his glove, Derek Law, who pitches in every game, it seems, and then Jose A. Ferrer, who throws cheddar cheese and is one of my personal cheese balls. Those are the Nats. Any specific people there you want to touch on?
quickly? I mean, Ruiz is, he was my key player last year because I just think it's so important to know who your catcher is. And the Nats thought they knew who their catcher is because they gave him a $50 million extension. Now they're kind of stuck with him. He does have an elite skill, which is that he does not strike out. He does put the bat on the ball, but the contact quality is so bad. And the defense, more problematically, is so bad, or at least has been, that he has been a negative player and has probably had a negative impact on the pitching staff to a certain degree. But the point is like he's the guy. They don't have, I know they drafted whatever Caleb Lomavita last year, but it's not like they have someone ready to take over for him. So he's going to either have to figure it out or they're stuck with him as the limited player that he is.
I just don't think he's the catcher on the next good Nats team. I think it's that simple. And I don't know how they get rid of him or they just eat that money. Yeah. It's not really that much, but I just have very little faith in Ruiz. I'd be happy to be proven wrong. The one big question about this team this year, though, is really on the pitching side, which is, does any impact pitching emerge? There were a lot of cute stories last year. Mitchell Parker, DJ Herz, Jake Irvin, who made the All-Star team, I believe. A lot of interesting guys, right? But none of them finished with an ERA plus over 105. They were all average or below. And you cannot be a competitive team trying to make the playoffs if that is the case. And so I think it is absolutely vital that this team finds a pitcher who you would feel comfortable starting a game two, let alone a game one of a playoff series.
Yeah, I think that's valid, right? They have assembled a lot of four starters, right? Jake Irvin, I don't think he made the All-Star team, but he munched innings and he was really solid.
He was
definitely in contention. He was like in the mix. Yeah. Like you could have made a strong case that he should have made it. Mackenzie Gore's the one that people know because he was part of the Soto trade. He was this big prospect. And on the right day, he looks like you catch Mackenzie Gore on the right day and you're like, yes, he can start a playoff game. But by the end of the year, his ERA was average. He had a ton of walks, a ton of wild pitches. It wasn't even that many strikeouts and the ERA was about four. So talent-wise, you still are assuming that Gore is the one that can maybe do that. But we now have a pretty large sample. Like, it's awesome that he stayed healthy for 32 starts. But you would think that if Mackenzie Gore, if you told me last year, oh, Gore's going to be healthy for 32 starts, I'm like, all right, great, boom, go time. Like, this is the breakout season. And it really wasn't that. That doesn't mean we can't see another step forward from him. But I agree with you, because when you look at the roster and why people are excited about the Nats, it's because of that younger offensive group. That's where we are seeing the star power in a James Wood, in a Dylan Cruz, et cetera, maybe some more guys coming through the minors. So let's talk about those key players. Do you want to hit on Gore a little bit more here? Because I do agree that the impact pitching is probably what is going to, we're thinking about the postseason, is going to dictate just how good they are or even how average they are.
I mean, yeah, you need impact arms. You need to develop impact arms through your system. And Gore is the pitcher at the big league level who has the highest chance of doing that. Now, another key player, and this is maybe silly, is Harleen Susana, who is a prospect who throws, literally sits 101 miles an hour. Does he matriculate to the big leagues? Is he an impact starter? Can he hold that velocity for a second straight year? In some ways, that is a more important question for the future of this organization than, like, how does Mitchell Parker look, right? Or, like, because Susana could be impact. He could change things. I don't know if Gore can redirect the fortunes of this franchise.
Sure, that's fair. And the other thing I would also mention is the Nats have the first pick in this year's draft, which is also interesting. Now, we're a long way from knowing what kind of the top of that board looks like, but there are certainly some pitchers that you can imagine kind of fitting in that bucket of like, oh, let's draft them. And there's no Paul Skenes in this draft. Sorry, Nats. But you could have a situation where they could draft a pitcher that moves quick. And then Travis Socorro is another pitcher in the minors that we're excited about, but he's injured right now. So a little bit more delayed. My key player though, is I'm just shifting back to the offense, is still James Wood, because when we're talking about ceiling, we're talking about star potential. I mean, him and Dylan Cruz are a really fun duo. We talked about them when we talked about the 26 and under project. It's part of why they rated so highly. Wood is the super freak, though, in the best way possible. Dylan Cruz, I've said this since he was, you know, a freshman at LSU, like, there's no way that guy is not going to be a solid major leaguer. There's just no way, right? He is going to be good, above average good player. Wood is the game changer. Wood is the one you are scared of when you are game planning for. And there's also a version where he struggles, where he deals with strikeouts, where he deals with some slumps in a ways that I think Cruz is just going to be so rock solid. But yeah. Wood is the one where it's like, oh my God, they have an absolute difference maker. Just his physical ability is unlike so much of what other young hitters have, because he is so uniquely shaped and so, just his skills are so different that he is still the one that by the end of the season, we could just be like, oh my gosh, they have a true difference maker.
So in my mind, Dylan Cruz is if Alex Bregman played the outfield, kind of.
Yeah.
Where I don't think he'll ever win an MVP, but he will make the team he's on a lot better every single year, make a couple All-Star games and be an impact player.
Yeah. Probably after Bregman's 2018-19, like, excuse that because the stats were so ridiculous, but I agree with you. I'm totally with you. Yeah.
Whereas Wood, from an offensive development standpoint, I think Ellie De La Cruz is a good place to start. Now, Ellie is a switch hitter, which is different, right? So he's always has a platoon advantage, and Wood has struggled with left-handed arms a little bit. But when you just look at someone who is shaped that way, who is lanky and lean and has these long arms, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. But like we saw with Ellie, the ceiling is preposterous, right? And the thing that Wood has that Ellie doesn't have is this elite feel of the strike zone. Like, Wood knows where the zone is in a very interesting way for a guy that big. So I'm just curious to see what type of season he has, right? Does he strike out a lot, right? But he really taps into some of the power. Or does he shorten up? And the batting average is higher than we think, but the home runs are a little bit lower. He's just such a mystery box. I can't wait to see how it pans out. Over under with this team, 71.5.
Over for me. I'll stick. How much closer they're going to get to 500, again, tough, especially in this division, is we'll see. But 71 a year ago, they added enough veteran pieces to where I think the floor is higher. And if the young players take enough of a step forward, like, yeah, this, I think 75, 76, I feel pretty good about this.
I'm going to take the under.
Okay. You think we're going, you think we're a little too premature in the excitement, and we might have some humbling in store.
Here's why. I don't think Wood or Cruz are going to be all-star level players right away. Like, it might take some time, and that's okay. Like, these guys are young. I think it'll happen with Cruz before it happens with Wood. I think it will happen with both of them eventually. Like, I'm all in. I just don't think there's a second level of depth here on either side of the ball where if there's any level of injury attrition, they can backfill that with meaningful talent. And so I just think that the floor is pretty low. And I'm not a believer in CJ Abrams as a defender. And I think that's kind of a significant deal here. Like, he is a key player on their next good team, but is he the shortstop of it? I don't know. Like, it's a pretty bad defensive rating. So I'm a little bit lower on the Nats. I think, though, they are significantly more entertaining this year. Like, they're very watchable. I'll take the over on their watchability. I'll take the under, like, just under. I think they win 70 games.
All right. Okay. So one step back. The last thing on the Nats before we take a break, which just has to be mentioned, is the Masson situation. So this is relevant because the ownership, the Alerners, who of course own the team for quite some time, they were exploring selling the team and then decided not to sell the team. What has been hanging over this franchise for years is it involves the television broadcast rights. So when the Nats moved to DC from Montreal, the Orioles were like, okay, fine, you can be here, but also, and you can be part of our sports network, but we are going to be getting a big portion of the money to allow you to be, you know, down the road, essentially. And originally it was like, fine, okay, that works. We'll be in DC and we'll have this situation where the Orioles are making more money off of the television broadcast or television network that we are both on. Then at some point over the last 10 years, the Nationals were like, hey, this is not how this should be working anymore. And there was all kinds of litigation between the two franchises involving, like, hey, the Orioles owe us money because we are on Masson and we are not getting the money that we are owed. Now, finally, this has been resolved almost certainly because of the change in ownership in Baltimore, if anything, is now they have come to an agreement where this year will be the last year where both teams are on Masson, after which the Nationals will be able to find their own television arrangement.
That should be on C-SPAN.
That would be great. That's great. You just have like every like 24 hour C-SPAN, like it just alternates between, you know, court hearings and like Dave Martinez press conferences. I love that. That is such a good idea. Anyway, it's more likely they will end up on this monumental sports network thing that has the Wizards and whatever. But this is important because this has been, if you're trying to buy the Nationals, this Masson mess has not been particularly attractive. So either this will allow the learners to start spending a little bit more freely because they know their television situation, they're making more money, or someone else will be more excited to buy the Nationals from the learners and we have a different ownership situation there at some point. So that is very important for the big picture part of this franchise. I just wanted to mention that. But as for the team, Jake goes under 71.5. I go over and we are taking a break. We'll be right back and then we will talk about the New York Mets.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Oh my God. It's time to talk about the New York Mets, who are projected to finish third in this division. Might be a surprise for some people considering they spent, I think, $3 or $4 over the winter and made the NLCS. That is what they did last year. Projected their over-under in 2024 was 81.5. Jake and Jordan both took the under. Boy.
It's funny dumb. Because, it, you know, in this preview, I will be the Mets hater, relatively. A year ago, you were like, Mets are going to stink. So now
I was so low on them. Yeah, I was wrong.
I mean, we both took the under. There were a lot of surprises in the Mets season, as we know. And then, more importantly, their winter was rather active as they signed this Soto fella. And they brought back this Pete fella and they traded for Jose Siri. Also brought back a bunch of other guys. Oh, Jesse Winker, nope. Come on back. Sean Manaea, come on back. Frankie Montas, here's $35 million. Woohoo. Clay just Holmes.
Go sit there.
Ooh, Clay Holmes. More on him in a second. AJ Minter. Busy offseason, of course. Steve Cohen from the very beginning all the way till the end where they were like, okay, Pete, come on back, buddy. Come on back. Nobody else wants
part of their offseason. The funniest part of this offseason was that they spent or they committed like nearly $1 billion, right?
I think over $1 billion. Yeah.
And yet at the end of the winter, everyone was like, can you believe these Dodgers? It's like if the Dodgers hadn't been doing like the Mets did a pretty similar thing, everyone. Like, are the Mets ruining baseball? They're not good enough to do that yet. And who is on their team behind the dish? Was supposed to be Francisco Alvarez, but a broken hamate bone is going to have him out about 2 months. And so Luis Torrens looks primed to get the everyday reps behind the plate. And if you take a look at the veteran catchers available, I do think they need one because there's not an obvious catcher in house. No shade to Jackson Reitz. Do you know who a veteran backstop is on the free agent market, Jordan? Who fits really
James
well
McCann,
here?
James McCann, baby.
James McCann signed where?
Bring him home.
Football's coming home. Pete Alonso, first base. Jeff McNeil, the squirrel at second. Mark Vientos, breakout bat in 2024 at third base. Francisco Lindor, the captain at shortstop. Brandon Nimmo in left. Juan Soto in right. And a platoon of Jose Siri and Tyrone Taylor, who are like the opposite in terms of energy. Like in terms Jose of energy. Jose Siri is like dropping Mentos and Diet Coke and then trying to close the lid. And Tyrone Taylor is like a nice cup of chamomile right before bed. DH is Jesse Winker and Starling Marte. And the starting rotation, which is a big question mark right now, is Kodai Senga, David Peterson, Clay Holmes, Tyler McGill, Griffin Canning, with Sean Manaea and Frankie Montas not exactly ready to go. Oh, sorry. Forgot about Paul Blackburn. The bullpen, Edwin Diaz, Jose Buto, Ryan Stanek, and AJ Minter when he gets back from health.
Jose Siri and Tyrone Taylor are interesting. I mean, I don't think they're a platoon. I think they're both right-handed. So I don't know if one is going to be, seems like Nimmo's days in center are pretty much over. I think to me, I'm more compelled by Siri being the one to replace Harrison Bader, right? Because Bader basically did exactly what they asked him to do last year, for better or for worse. Anyway, people don't care. Listen, there's a lot more to talk about that Siri and Tyrone Taylor. So what is our one big question about the Mets? It's very simple. Is this pitching World Series quality? After making the NLCS last year and spending $1 billion, you would think that the next step was we are trying to win the World Series. And some of the moves that they have made so far have immediately looked silly. Frankie Montas, why are you giving him all that money? He wasn't good and hasn't been healthy that much. He immediately gets hurt. Clay Holmes, though, we're like, Clay Holmes is going to be a starter? Well, he looks unbelievably amazing. Now, there are still questions about how that's going to work over 150 plus innings, but that one is looking, that's looking pretty good. And then Sean Manaea, we all felt great. Oh my God, they managed to bring back Manaea. He was such a big, important part of their team. He's hurt too. Maybe that's just bad luck. But again, we read those names. Does that sound like a championship rotation? I don't think it does.
And it's interesting because of how their season ended. They lost to the Dodgers in the NLCS. Simply, they just ran out of human beings with enough juice left in their backyard baseball juice box to throw innings. It was that simple. Like, their arms were exhausted. They had Ryan Stanek throw 2 2/3 and then come back with the next game. They just didn't have anybody. And then they didn't really add to it. They added some depth, but they didn't really add impact here. And that's what has me concerned, is that the potential best pitcher on this team, Kodai Senga, who was amazing in 2023, threw 6 regular season innings this season ago. And I look at these names and it's really hard to envision them winning a World Series. There are some compelling guys and you're like, oh, they could win a division. And I don't mean this necessarily as a slight. It just feels like a Brewers rotation. You know what I mean?
Ironically,
I get why, but it just feels like this group is good, but it doesn't feel like they're great. And I have a lot of faith in the pitching development here. Yep. I think what they've done with Clay Holmes already has been amazing, but the magic dust only works so far.
Yeah. Yankees are probably watching Clay Holmes like, oh man, we should have tried that. We could have used him right now. I agree, right? But if you tell me that I'm getting 2023 Kodai Senga in game one, that's great. That's a long time from now, you know, and we've just barely seen him, and so that's the concern. Now at the same time, you could look at this lineup and be like, why are you so concerned? This might, you know, the top of this lineup might be one of the best in baseball. It should be one of the best in baseball. I mean, that's what you're paying for, so you're hoping that the Lindor, Soto, Alonso, Nemo, Vientos, right? Is Vientos is as good as he was last year? Like, holy crap, like, look at that top five. But again, like, in this division, you got to get there. And I know that they got there in an improbable fashion a year ago and almost made it to the World Series, sort of. But this is, I just think that you're setting yourself up in the same way. Now, you could say a year ago, part of why we were low on them was we looked at the pitching and we were like, really, is this going to be that good? And they outperformed. But with kind of the handicap that they're starting at, just losing these guys to start the season, even is tough.
I think this group right now is as good as it was a year ago. I'm considering it in the same way. It's just the expectations are different.
Yes, exactly.
Heading into last year, it was like, man, can the Mets take some steps forward? And now they're coming off the NLCS. They signed Juan Soto. Let's win a World Series. Let's, you know, take over the Big Apple from the Yankees. They didn't make the moves to do that. And so for that reason, my key player is Kodai Senga, because the gap in what we've seen from him is so large, dude. It's so large. I mean, he's through one regular season start last year.
Yeah.
6 innings, I believe.
Can't believe he came back. Like, it was
pitching the playoffs.
It was like, I was like, it's crazy. Cool. It's so good to have him back. I was like, well, this doesn't feel like the best plan. But to your point, they didn't have a choice. They were like, all right, screw it. We'll take Kodai Senga for 2 innings if we can. And that was how desperate they were last year.
And then the other big one for me really is how Francisco Alvarez comes back. Like,
yeah,
just because he is so important from the defensive game calling pitch handling standpoint, that not having your catcher is really like the worst thing that can happen to a team. So how long he's out for and what he looks like when he gets back, those are important things to monitor.
Yeah. I mean, I'll mention Clay Holmes again just because, I mean, especially when we're talking about waiting for Montas and Manaea to come back, is it going to be a situation where it's like, we need those guys back as soon as possible? Or it's like, if Clay Holmes is this good, we're at least not as concerned for the first few weeks, because then getting them back, it's like, oh, he's joining this awesome version of Clay Holmes. Or it's like, please come back. This Clay Holmes starting pitching experiment is not working, and we're already in a bit of a hole. Now, there are other guys kind of lower down that they're going to be worth watching, right? Guys like Brandon Sproat, who we've kind of seen in the minors. Are any of those guys going to take enough of a step forward to where they kind of force the Mets' hand and give them a chance to get innings in a starting role? I know they still have Blackburn. I know Max Kranich has been really blowing people away this year. I don't know if that would probably be in more of a relief role, but and McGill is probably criminally underrated at this point. I know we keep just laughing like, oh, there's Tyler McGill still around for when everyone else gets hurt. Like, he's at least been solid in spurts, but I don't know. I it is putting a lot on this Mets pitching development again, even more than we already thought they were going to have to do with guys like Montas, right? I mean, the Montas thing, that was the one where we were like, all right, let's see what they can do to get him to be better. So it's putting a lot of pressure on that pitching group again. And I think they've proven a lot, but I'm a little bit concerned as to where they're going to be by the time they're even totally healthy, let alone the postseason.
Jordan Schusterman, Mets hater. The line is 90.5. Where are you?
I'm under. I think this team's going to be good. I think that Lindor, like, I mean, if Lindor is just the player he was last year, which was, again, the best season we've seen from him in 7 years, then yeah, we're cooking. We're going to have our top of their lineup is going to win them a lot of games. I just see that the depth here is concerning for me. The bottom of the lineup, the bench, is not a group that I feel particularly confident in. And because of that, I'm closer to 86, 85 at this point, which I don't know yet if that is going to be there in the postseason or not, but right now, definitely under 90.5.
I'll take the under at 92. I do think they're a postseason team for sure. I believe in the front office and this coaching staff to just suck up wins.
Sure.
Like David Stearns, all that time in Milwaukee, was just uncovering value behind every rock. And I think that's part of why the Mets were able to do what they did last year, is because their process is really good now. And so I think that gives them a high floor. I have zero faith that they can win a World Series. Mm. I have a ton of faith that they can make the playoffs.
Mm. Yeah. And by the way, like, we probably should have spent more time talking about Soto and Lindor. Like, consider this the ultimate compliment for Soto, where I'm just penciling him in, you know, six and a half wins. You know, yeah. 160 OBPs plus. And maybe that alone, the fact that you're just putting that in, is putting them in an even better position than they were a year ago, regardless of all the pitching mess. So maybe that's totally valid. So I'm not trying to underestimate Juan Soto here. I don't know. There's just parts of this other roster that have me a little bit concerned. But let's move on, as we both take the slight under on 90.5, and let's go to the Phillies of Philadelphia.
Last year, what'd they do? Their over-under was 89.5. We both took the over, and we were both correct, as they won 95 games in their first NL East Division Championship since 2011. Those 95 wins was enough for a bye into the first round of the playoffs, where they crashed and burned against those New York Mets. Game two against New York was one of the greatest games I've ever seen in person. But then they went to New York and got whacked.
What do they do this winter? Remember, as soon as they lost, there was like John Middleton was out there talking like, we need to change. We cannot be going through this again.
Mix it up.
We got to mix it up. And then we had all these Alec Boehm trade rumors. And it was like, oh boy, things are going to change in Philadelphia. And then Alec Boehm certainly didn't get traded. They did make some interesting additions. Max Kepler in the outfield. Jordan Romano replaces Jeff Hoffman. They trade for Jesus Luzardo to make their rotation on paper arguably the best in baseball. But all the main characters are still here. They didn't send, ship out Alec Boehm. They didn't, you know, find a way to salary dump Nick Castellanos or anything like that. This is still the Phillies that we have grown to watch a whole bunch of over the last 3 years, for better or for worse.
This is Philadelphia Phillies season 4, streaming on NBC Sports. It is the same cast of characters, and here's who they are behind the dish. JT Realmuto in a contract year. Looks like he's going to be backed up by Rafael Marchand to start the year. Marchand is out of options. Garrett Stubbs has an option. If I had to, you know, gamble, to bet, to I'd say Garrett starts the year in Lehigh Valley. First base, Bryce Harper, you know the deal. Just still underrated somehow. I mean, what a remarkable player he is. Second base, Bryson Stott. Third base, Alec Bohm. Shortstop, Trey Turner. Castellanos in right. Max Kepler in left, and Brandon Marsh in center. Johan Rojas will play, but he's going to be more of a backup. Kyle Schwarber, DH. And then what I think is maybe the best rotation in baseball, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, and Jesus Luzardo. Really should have put Sanchez second. Looks like he's going to start the second game of the year, actually, for them. I'm so high on that guy. And then in the bullpen, Jose Alvarado, Matt Strom, Ryan Kirkering, and Jordan Romano. My one big question here is less about the personnel. Like, these are good baseball players, right? But how do they recapture the feeling of 2022? Because the Phillies, especially down the stretch last season, it just all felt stale.
Yeah. And that is, again, you've watched this team up close a bunch. You know, as you mentioned, like the personnel stayed the same. In some ways, some of the flaws of the personnel were exposed over the course of the postseason in the last few years. At the same time, we saw them have similarly bad games when they were making deeper runs, right? We saw them, they got no hit in the World Series. Like, we saw them in the World Series get no hit, and we were still feeling awesome about them, right? So the way that this is trending is concerning. And I think back to the first version of this Phillies dynasty of sorts, where when they win in 08.
Whoa. Hold on. Whoa. Dynasty?
What? Okay. Run. Wrong word. Sorry. Edit it out. Producer Colin, don't embarrass me by calling the Phillies a dynasty. The era of the Phillies being very good. All right. There you go.
Thank you.
There's my edit. You're right. Not a dynasty. Obviously not a dynasty, because what happened was they won the World Series. And then what happened the next year? They lost the World Series. Then they lost in the CS. Then they lost in the DS. And then they sucked for 7 years, basically. So now, do I think the Phillies are about to suck for 7 years? No. But the fact that they're backsliding, where they are in the World Series, then they lose in the CS, then they lose in the DS. Now it's like, okay, guys, come on. Like, we got to get back trending in the right direction. We didn't actually win the World Series yet. They hold strong because, yes, this roster is still so good. I'm still looking at this team and thinking, absolutely, they could win the World Series this year. But they have, to your point, they have to recapture that mojo. And I don't know where that comes from, because when it is the same guys, it's not like they don't have the leadership. It's not like they don't understand the situation. It's just a matter of sequencing. It's a matter where last year we saw them, you could say they just peaked too early, and then they couldn't kind of maintain it all the way to the end. Maybe this year that you kind of just keep it chill, and then you find your hot streak in September. Again, it's not really up to them. This is just how baseball works.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that. The personnel is still good enough to where they should be in contention to win the World Series. I just think it's going to be, I don't know. I don't know what the difference is going to be, if anything, or it'll just work out in their favor this time.
Yeah. Sometimes postseason is just a coin flip. Right. Sometimes you strike out 14 times. Sometimes you don't. Their approach of swinging a lot did sink them each of the last two seasons. For that reason, my key player is Trey Turner, who should be the second best player on this team after Bryce Harper. It should be Trey Turner. Like, he is getting paid at that level. That is the reputation. That is the expectation. That is the level of impact he can provide when he's going right. And we've seen him go right in stretches like that for the Phillies. He's just been so up and down the last 2 years since he got here. He has 9 more seasons as a Philly. That was an 11-year deal, okay?
Yeah.
So for me, the key is for Turner to find some level of consistency. Hit, like, have like an 860 OPS over a 4-month span, you know? Like, just have a normal, good season. I think that is important for this club.
Yeah, I think that's valid. I'm compelled by some of these new guys. I'm compelled by Kepler. I think he could be really solid for them. I think Luzardo, there's not a lot of pressure on him because he's technically the 5 starter, but there's a version of him where he does make them, you know, this super rotation that we're kind of seeing on paper. But I really like the Jordan Romano story. I think that him unintentionally swapping with Jeff Hoffman, who goes to Toronto, how important Jeff Hoffman was over these last few years. That's what I'm interested in. Can they replace that? They have other good relievers, right? We like Kirkering. Alvarado can be awesome. Strom, of course, is still there. Romano was just injured and bad last season, but he was one of the best closers in baseball for the three, you know, seasons prior. So that's the bet that they're making on him. And if he's healthy, I think he can be that. I guess I'm just really curious if he can bounce back to the point where, like, he's obviously the capital C closer. Like, does Jordan Romano lead this team in saves? I think that's the plan. I think that's plan A. I'm curious if it works out that way.
They're not going to do that. The Phillies do not do capital C closer. Like, Rob Thompson's not interested in really breaking it down that definitively. And it'll just be like, oh, do you fit against this window of hitters? Go get him, big guy. Like, I don't think if he leads them in saves, that is necessarily indicative of how his season went.
Yeah.
That's all.
It's interesting because, like, I know what you're saying. And then yet when they trade for Estevez last year, like, he kind of was, I guess they sort of used him in more roles. But I don't know. That strategy, because of the arms that they've had, is not a bad one. It's obviously a very modern one. But Romano has been that. That's all he knows so far. So I'm curious if he fits into that or if you're right. They're throwing him out there in seventh.
Over under 90.5 wins for the Phillies.
I'll still go over. I don't know if I am feeling 95 like they did a year ago, but I think still over here. And I still might be picking them to win the division, but obviously we're going to talk about Atlanta in a second.
I'll go over as well. I think the pitching is so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And I will bank on that.
Yeah.
And even if it's not that good, I have some so let's say Ranger Suarez goes down. Then you still have Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Christopher Sanchez, and Jesus Lazardo, right? Like, it's not, and whoever you're backfilling into that spot isn't impact, but it's just so much, it's all impact. All five of these guys can be impact. And so because of that, I'm high on the arms. I worry, as always, do they strike out too much in October? But let's just get to the All-Star break first.
Yeah, that's fair. And I will also say, before we take a break, that I'm curious how much of a character Andrew Painter is in the second half.
Yeah.
If one of these guys goes down, obviously they're going to slow play him as he's not pitched in 2 years. But that is a pit. Talk about impact. Like, he could be a new character in this Philly story that would be a fun one to add into the mix.
I had a scout who saw him in camp, a scout who saw him at the end of last season be like,
Fall League.
Tell me, Fall League. They're like, that's Justin Verlander. Like, that's what it reminds you of.
Yep.
The ceiling on Painter's bonkers. What kind of impact does he have this year? We will see. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we will talk about the best team in the division. Hey, welcome back to the End of Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mitz, George Schusterman, and Annalise preview. The Atlanta Braves won 35 division crowns in a row, but then last year they all got the plague and their whole team was injured. Their over under last year was 101.5, and we both took the over. They ended up with 89 wins and were bounced without winning a game in the wild card round. Now, a lot of that had to do with Spencer Strider blowing out his elbow in April, Ronald Acuna blowing out his ACL in late May, significant stretches on the injured list from Austin Riley, Ozzy Albies, Sean Murphy, Michael Harris. That was very tough for them to overcome. Chris Sale won the Cy Young. Wasn't enough. The Braves. Well,
Chris Sale won the Cy Young and then was unavailable in the postseason. That was a tough sequence.
Feels relevant.
The fact that they, let's recall how they even got in. 89 wins is a great season for a lot of teams, but it required the ridiculously goofy situation on the final day of the season with the Mets that involved them losing and then essentially being handed the second game because the Mets didn't care. It was a very weird final month for Atlanta.
Shouts out to this ragtag group that dragged them into the playoffs, including Gio Urshela, Whit Merrifield, Luke Williams, Adam Duvall, who
Grant Holmes,
God,
baby,
he was terrible. Ramon Laureano, like, they were out there throwing stuff at the wall. I actually think last year was one of Brian Snitker's most impressive managing performances. Just like to get that team into October was amazing. Over the offseason, a lot of guys out. the door. Travis d'Arnaud had an option. They said, thanks for the memes. He goes to the Angels. Jorge Soler gets traded to the Angels. Charlie Morton, who'd been there for a while, he leaves in free agency. And then the big one, Max Fried signs for over $200 million with the New York Yankees. At no point did it ever feel like Fried was coming back to the Braves. And now we are at a point where there are very few players left from the 2021 World Series team. I believe it is just Austin Riley, Ozzie Albies, Ian Anderson. Orlando Arcia was on that team as well, but he did not. I think he had one at bat in the World Series. He was not necessarily impact on that team. All right. They do sign Jerickson Profar to be the everyday left fielder. Got him late in the winter. He had a little injury scare the other day. Seems like he's going to be good to go for opening day. Who's on this team? You take it, Jordan.
Sean Murphy behind the dish, although he is also going to be injured, it seems like, to start the season. So we'll circle back on the catchers there. They still have Drake Baldwin, top prospect we've talked a lot about in this pod recently. Seems like he's going to be certainly in the mix to be on the team to start the season. I don't know if he'll be the opening day catcher, but he might be. I mean, he's done everything he can to be in position to.
And then there's Chadwick Tromp, who
yes.
I think every year I do top 50 players to influence the 2025-4 season or whatever. If I was doing 100, Chadwick Tromp would be on that list just because he's going to be in the big leagues a lot this year. Like, he's going to be playing a lot. And his last name is Tromp, and he wears number 45. And people are going to be like, holy crap, Tromp.
Well, right. This is true. This will be on. We'll see how much playing time he gets in the early going while Murphy is out. But he could be getting a lot of screen time. And obviously, they must have believed in him to a degree to be like, yeah, Travis. I know it was more about Drake Baldwin. But the catching depth here, they had to have some amount of faith of him with Murphy's injury track record. First base Matt Olson. That guy does not miss games. He is essentially he's pretty much the Iron Man we have right now. There's not really anyone else that's on his level, or at least he's in that very short group of most durable players in baseball. Second base, Ozzie Albies. Third base, Austin Riley, still there. Orlando Arcia, also still there, incredibly, at shortstop after a dreadful season at the plate, but he is still picking it at shortstop. Ronald Acuña Jr. will be back at some point, although it seems likely that before he comes back, we will be getting a Brian De La Cruz, Jared Kelnick platoon in right field. Ooh. Center field, Michael Harris, the second. He's great. I love Michael Harris.
Yeah,
Profar, if he is not actually that injured, will be in left. And then Marcell Ozuna, who was really the only Braves hitter who was awesome for the entirety of last year, is still there at DH. The rotation projected Chris Sale, Spencer Strider when he comes back. Timing TBD. Spencer Schwellenbach, what a season. This dude
all
is legit. Reynaldo Lopez, also what a season, although he had some injury issues at the end of the year. Grant Holmes, who people became very familiar with at the end of the year. And then Ian Anderson still bouncing around. A lot of other guys who, of course, we've seen in the big leagues. A.J. Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrop, a couple other. Bryce Elder, of course, Dylan Dodd. They have a bunch of guys kind of that could be shuffling through that five-starter spot. And then in the bullpen, Raisel Iglesias. One of the great relief seasons of the 21st century, very quietly, in 2024. He's been doing it for a long time. Probably the most underrated closer of his generation. He has been amazing, and he is still there. Aaron Bummer, Pierce Johnson. I guess A.J. Minter not being there anymore is another familiar face that is no longer in that Atlanta pen, but they still have some pretty solid relievers there. Bummer, Dylan Lee still there as well. Jake, what is the big question for this team?
How good is the offense?
Mm-hmm.
Which feels silly, and that touches on a lot of different things. Now, a year ago, they were 17th in baseball in offense. They were exactly average from a WRC plus standpoint. They were middle of the pack in runs. They were third to last in stolen bases. Now, a lot of everything that I just said, I'm well aware, has to do with Ronald Acuña and all the other injuries, right? Still, that's relevant. Is what we saw last year an aberration? Or the beginning of a trend of players as they age?
Well, that's the thing, because it's not just about last year. It's the fact that in 2023, this was one of the best offenses we've ever seen, with almost entirely the same players. When they were first in runs, first in homers, first in OPS plus, first in, like, they were dominant. And you can't just say it was all Acuña, because it wasn't all Acuña. Of course he was a huge part of that. Of course he was leading the charge. But you can't just be like, oh, well, they lost Acuña, so their offense was suddenly 17th. It's just not that simple. And well, so yeah.
Here's the thing, right? They were hurt and they were worse. Mm-hmm. They were hurt and worse. If you showed me all their injuries before the season and been like, where were they ranked? I'd be like, 9th? Mm-hmm. 11th? Right?
And not below.
Now, maybe they were worse because they were hurt in part. I think that's true with someone like Austin Riley, who was playing through some stuff. But it was just a bigger drop-off than I think I expected. Here, now I'm going to answer my own question. Yes. This offense is still really good. Really, really good. Would you rather have this offense or the Mets?
Oh, man. That's a great question.
I think
question.
I'd rather have both than the Phillies.
Okay. I think I agree with that. I think I agree with that just because of the way the Phillies are trending. And if you're just saying, like, the best player, you know, you got Soto. I mean, Acuña's another one where it's like he wasn't the same guy last year even before he went down. So that's another one. Yep. Is I'm trying to figure out what exactly we're getting from him. But if you're also adding a version of Profar that we got last year, I mean, that could really be making this lineup even better than it was. But even if you're not counting him, I think this is a deeper group than, I don't know.
Because, okay,
that's
so
really close.
Here's the thing. The top six right now of Profar, Riley, Olson, Ozuna, Harris, Albies is sick. Like, that's sick, right? The bottom three of Chadwick Tromp, Orlando Arcia, Jared Kelenic / Brian De La Cruz, that's terrible. I mean, Arcia was the second worst qualified hitter in baseball last year. De La Cruz was the third worst. Okay. And Kelenic was underwhelming that they went and signed Profar. Right. And so I'm so interested in this team. I'm going to side with them. I do think they just have so many freaking dudes here, man. They just got dudes. Who are your key players?
Yeah. So I want to pick someone from that offensive group. I guess I'll just be boring and go with Acuña. You know, Reynaldo Lopez is interesting to me just because it was like, wow, really? They're going to remember when they signed him to be a starter and we were like, all right, what are they doing? This is another team that has quietly earned the benefit of the doubt of, like, they know what they're doing with the pitching. So to me, because of that, if Lopez is awesome again, great. If he's not, they have a lot of other guys that are going to step in and I feel like are pretty good. Whereas on offense, if Acuña comes back and looks close to MVP Acuña, well, which he probably won't. It's not just because that's just how it works when you come back from a second tearing your other knee for the second time in however many years that he dealt with an ACL tear. I should be patient there. But I don't know. I think I'm still just going to go with Acuña. Acuña or Harris. Harris is the other one where offensively he has trended in the wrong direction. He's still hitting the ball very hard, but his extremely aggressive approach has slowly been exploited more and more since he was a rookie. But if he can kind of get back to being an actual force offensively, that would also kind of change the lineup's complexion a lot. So I don't know. It's hard to pick between all these different hitters.
Here's where I'm at. I'm going to go with Chris Sale. He threw, I think, 177 innings last year, which was an impressive uptick year over year, considering he'd been injured for so long. I think he's important because he's their only lefty. He's their only lefty starter. Even if Strider comes back and is good, even if Smith-Shawver comes up and is good, Hurston Waldrop comes up and is good, Bryce Elder spot starts, Chris Sale is the only lefty. And in this division with Soto and Harper and Nimmo and James Wood, having a guy who throws with his left arm that can start regularly is important. And so Sale staying healthy is still an enormous key for this team.
Yeah. Well, and that's just a reminder of how last season ended, right? I mean, it seemed like he's all fine this year, right? It doesn't seem like he's had any limitations in camp or anything, but that was an untimely reminder that he is still both pretty old and he's about to be 36 and like pretty fragile historically. So as I said last year, even when we were previewing, I was like, I'm not worried about Chris Sale being bad. I'm just worried about him being on the team or being healthy. And so if he's out there, I think he's going to be pretty awesome. I think you're maybe hyper focusing a little too much on the left-on-left matchup, but if you're zooming all the way to those biggest games, I think that's valid.
If anything, that matters, you know, over time. Like,
yeah,
let's just say the Mets and the Phillies. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's say he gets four starts against them during the year. Three, hopefully, maybe. Yeah. I mean, that's significant.
Hey, in a division this close, yeah, those at bats are very important. And I guess it's also important for Aaron Bummer and Dylan Lee and, you know, Angel Perdomo or whatever lefties
are in the bullpen. It's also important when you're playing other teams. Like if you roll into a series with three right-handed pitchers, teams can like manipulate their roster in a way if they have that type of window in that lane to kind of stack the lineup with lefties if they need to. And so just having anyone who throws with their left arm in the starting rotation is important. Over-under for this team is 93.5.
Yeah. How about that? 93.5. Again, I haven't decided if I'm picking the Phillies or the Braves yet. So this is where I find myself sort of having to make a decision here if I'm going to go under. I think I'm going to go over. I really think this is going to be super, super close with these two teams at the top. But yeah, I think that they've added enough and they have enough coming back. They were so not healthy last year and they still got to 89 wins. So I will go over.
I will go over. And this is the best team in the division. I think their ceiling is the second highest in baseball behind the Dodgers. Just because think of all the players on this roster that have performed at an all-star level over the last two seasons, right? That's Murphy, Olson, Riley, Arcia, Harris, Profar, Ozuna. It's the whole line.
Yeah, Murphy.
He was an all-star in 2023, as was Arcia. I know that's I'm cherry picking here. I get it. Sure. But you get my point. Like, we have seen all of these guys be badasses at some point over the last two seasons.
That's true.
Right?
That's
true. And then the same is true in the rotation. And so this is dumb baseball analysis. I think the Atlanta Braves have too many good players to be bad.
Well, that basically proved to be true last year when a lot was going wrong.
And they can't get that unlucky again. They can't get that unlucky again. Yeah. Division order. I think I'm going Braves, Phillies, Mets, Nats, Marlins. Not that difficult for me.
I think a lot of people will go with that order. I think with I think a fully healthy Mets team would have made this more of an interesting conversation going into the year. And maybe we should still consider them and not overrate the injuries at the start of the season too badly. But I'm with you. I think that's my order right now. By the time we lock in our picks, I might end up picking the Phillies, but I'll take both of those teams over the Mets for now. And maybe I am a hater. That's it, Jake. We did it. We previewed the NL East. NL Central is next on Wednesday. NL West on Friday. We will see what other news comes about regarding people's elbows and shoulders and whatever. Hopefully people keep staying healthy. But thank you to Nats fan producer Colin Brennan, who was dropping Brady House takes in the chat while we were talking about the Nats. Thank you to Colin for making this episode possible. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. It's my 30th birthday today. If you have any advice for turning 30, let me know. baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. I would very much appreciate it. But I'm glad I got to spend this birthday talking about Jesus Tinoco and Max Kepler. What a treat. Thank you, Jake. and if you're watching on YouTube, you should watch on YouTube. That's what I'll say. If you're watching on YouTube, you should watch on YouTube so you can see what is behind Jake Mintz right now. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you on Wednesday.
I didn't even get a chance to wish you a happy birthday, Jordan. Congrats on turning. Jordan.
Turning 30.
I'll be bumping that all day long. Don't you worry.